to a pub for a drink. And, well, we had a marvelous red wine. And when I came back, I thought, well, how should I start, really? And then I remembered that actually I already gave before. And it doesn't work, obviously. Oh, now it works. Gave before a talk with almost the same title. It was 4 years ago in Sinclair, 4 years actually, and 2 months ago. And at that time, in the title, I had this question mark, and it was abbreviation TBA. And I felt that, at that time, I felt that it was really necessary to decipher it. So TBA stands for thermodynamic beta ansatz. And as you see, it's been already more than 4 years since, well, we started doing this TBA. And I was a little bit upset when I realized this, because 4 years for a string theorist, it's almost an eternity. But then I remembered that exactly at the same conference, Maldacena gave a talk on string amplitudes, on amplitudes from string theory. And many of you are doing this since then. So basically, I am in the same situation as the majority of people here. And I think then it's not that bad after all. So I'm going to, so now what we did now, we added to this TBA a new word, mirror. And today I'm going to explain, I'll try to explain why we added this word. What does it really mean? And here is the title of my talk. And I should say from the very beginning that this talk is not for experts in the field. You should not expect seeing any technical details. And to those of you who want to kind of know some definitions, they are on the blackboard. So I'll just try to explain the ideas behind the mirror TBA approach. And, well, actually, the second part of my, the last part of my talk is a little bit more technical, but in principle I can skip it, so please do not hesitate to ask questions and slow me down if you will feel that I'm moving too fast. So I will be talking about the mirror TBA. I'll discuss how to describe excited state spectrum by using the TBA approach. I'll consider the application of the mirror TBA to two particle states, and I'll make some predictions for strong coupling expansion of several string theory states and dual field theory iterators. And finally, I'll discuss how the PSU2,2/4 symmetry is realized in the TBA framework. And in a summary, I'll discuss the assumptions which are necessary to make to realize the program. So let me start with a general thing. So I'm studying the ADS CFT correspondence between n equal 4 Cpan mils and type 2B string theory on ADS5S5. I will be interested only in the planar limit of this correspondence. So the number of colors in the series goes to infinity, and the Toft coupling constant is kept fixed in this limit. And according to the correspondence, the string tension, which will be denoted by the letter G, is equal to square root of lambda divided by 2 pi. The definition is also on the blackboard. Most people divide square root of lambda by 4 pi, but if you are doing string series, this is the most natural coupling constant to be used. So string theory supernal separators are dual to string states, and the scaling dimension of the primary operators in field theory are equal to the string energy. Yeah. It is a harmonic oscillator of the ADS CFT correspondence. It is the simplest possible example of the correspondence. So the hope is that if we will be able to understand this duality in detail, we would be able to go beyond it. We would be able to say something about non-conformal cases as well. That's actually, oh, sorry. This does not belong to me. It is Klebanov who first used it. But I kind of liked it. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to try to compute scaling dimensions of the operators, and I'm going to do it by using, and it is called the spectral problem of the ADS-CFT correspondence. So finding, computing, scaling dimensions of the Young-Mills operators. So I'm going to do it, obviously, by using string theory. So I want to use string theory sigma model to extract some information about four-dimensional quantum field theory. And in principle, it may also check the conjecture. I should, however, say that what I'm doing is not a proof of the conjecture, because at the end, I always have to assume that the ADS-CFT correspondence works, and I'm just getting some results in string theory and then use it for field theory. So the starting point is the Green-Schwarz superstring action constructed by Mitsaev and Saintly a while ago. So it, as usual, it contains the scalar fields and fermions, and it has the string tension in front of the action. As a result, in string theory, the weak coupling expansion is actually expansion in 1 over G. However, I will be calling larger G strong coupling and small G weak coupling, because that's how it works in field theory. So the model is a gauge invariant, reparametrization invariant. It is necessary to fix, this string theory is reparametrization invariant. It is necessary to fix some gauge to deal with it. And for the spectral problem, the most important, well, the most useful gauge appears to be the light cone gauge. And on this blackboard, I give some definitions to those of you who doesn't know what it is. So, so in the light cone gauge, the Hamiltonian, two-dimensional Hamiltonian of the string sigma model appears to be equal to E minus J, where E is the string energy, target space string energy, so it is computed by using the target space time isometry. And, well, mathematically, it is just the Noether charge corresponding to the SO2 subgroup of the conformal group, SO4, 2. And J is also a conserved charge. It is an angular momentum of a string moving around an equator of S5. So it corresponds to one of the SO2 subgroups of SO6. So as a result, if we know the spectrum of this two-dimensional Hamiltonian, we know E, and according to the ADS-CFT correspondence, we know the scaling dimensions of the Young-Mills operators. But to do it, we actually have to deal with the quantum two-dimensional sigma model, so we have to solve a quantum theory. And the theory is defined on a cylinder. If you use this gauge wrote there, the range of sigma, sorry, I forgot to put the sigma here. The range of sigma is from 0 to j, or from minus j over 2 to j over 2. So it is a series defined on a cylinder with a circumference equal to j, equal to the charge j. And to solve it, well, the reason why we can solve the problem is, of course, the integrability of the model. So before I discuss how it is done, let me also introduce some notations and explain what kind of operators I will be discussing. So as I said, we are dealing with maximally supersymmetric Young-Mills theory. This is the field content of the theory, and it is useful to introduce three complex fields, complex combinations, X, Y, and Z, and also to introduce the light cone derivative D. I'll come to that, okay? This one? So this is a classical formula, right? So I will talk about that later. Yeah, if you just impose the light Coulomb gauge, then you get the Hamiltonian in this form. There is a cylinder. Yeah. Here is a cylinder. We have periodic boundary conditions imposed on the fields, periodic or anti-periodic. Actually, there are two sectors. No, there is no winding here because T is equal to tau. So it is a very special light cone gauge. I can. In this gauge, I can. So all of these configurations are contained in this action. I think you mean something else, and well, we can discuss this later, but it's not going to be in any case that important for me. We introduce this complex combinations of fields. We can see the operators. Wow, what's that? We can see the operators which look like that. So linear combinations of operators which are traces of products of d to the power n k z. Obviously, these operators carry the charge equal j, the U1 charge, corresponding to multiplication of z by phase. And n here, the total, this sum over n k is the spin of this operator. So these operators are dual to n particle states of the light cone string theory. And I will be talking, discussing mainly spin two operators. At least I will be applying TBA only for spin two operators, which are dual to two particle states. And if n is equal to two and j is equal to two, then the corresponding, there is only one unprotected operator of this type, and this operator is a descendant of the Kanishi operator. This is the simplest operator, and honestly speaking, it is a pretty boring operator. But since it is the simplest one, we will be discussing these two. So that's the summary of the TBA approach. So we have the idea CFT duality. We start with string sigma model. After that, we perform what I call a double weak rotation, but people who are doing condensed matter call it Matsubara transform. By doing this double weak rotation, we obtain mirror theory. To perform the double weak rotation, I must work in a gauge-fixed string sigma model, in the light cone gauge. I don't know how to do it in any other gauge. So after that, once we get the mirror theory, we use the Malochikov's idea, which relates the free energy of the mirror theory to the energy of the ground state of the original model, of the string theory model. So to obtain the energy of the ground state, what we need to do, we need to study the thermodynamics of the mirror theory. So we consider this thermodynamic limit, and we obtain the TBA equations for the mirror theory. So that's why we call this mirror TBA, because what we study is the thermodynamics of the mirror theory. Mirror probably isn't the best word here. I suppose it would be better to call it, more appropriate to call it dual TBA, but since duality has been used in this subject very heavily, we prefer to call it mirror. Once we have the TBA equations, so this procedure, the thermodynamic limit, leads to a set of non-linear integral equations and for the ground state. And then there are various procedures, various tricks, which are not proved, which allow us to extract from the ground state TBA equations the corresponding equations for excited states. So we can obtain the spectrum, as a result, the spectrum of the string theory sigma model. And if the ADCFT correspondence is correct, then at the same time, we get the spectrum of scaling operators of n equal 4 sweep n nils. So, as I said, the starting point is string sigma model. We can use all the results obtained during many, many years of study
of the stream sigma model. So for the TBA approach, I should actually say that the first time I saw the words TBA in the context of the DSCFT correspondence, it was in the paper by Ambjör, Janik, and Christensen. I don't know why they didn't pursue this idea and didn't try to derive the TBA equations, but in any case, it was the first time I personally heard about TBA. But to construct the TBA, we need basically S matrix, well, beta ansatz, dispersion relation, and these are the papers where all of that was studied. I'm sorry, I couldn't put all the possible references. I definitely missed some of the papers. This was the papers important for me. So, what is good about that? So, let me stress that strictly speaking, if you use a TBA, you do not really need to study string sigma model. What you need to do is to study the Mears theory. But fortunately, the results for Mears theory can be obtained by using the results, can be extracted from the results obtained in string theory. So, we do not really have to do much work. And here is the summary of this investigation. And as you can see, these two theories, string theory and Mears theory, they are very different. In particular, the dispersion relations are absolutely different. Then the range of the momenta is also different. And in particular, if you look at the dispersion relation for particles of the string, of the light cone string theory, you can see that it is a dispersion relation for a relativistic scalar field on a lattice. And the step of this lattice is equal to 1 over G, 1 over string tension. So when the string tension becomes very large, we get a continuum theory. But if the string tension is small, it is a purely lattice theory. On the other hand, the Mears theory, the range of the momenta is the usual one, from minus infinity to infinity. And by this reason, it is actually a continuum model. And from this point of view, it is much closer to the usual relativistic models. So there are other differences in these two models. But in particular, physical regions are different. Here on this blackboard, I draw physical regions for string theory and for Mears theory. And for comparison with relativistic models, so this is so-called Z-torus. This is what we call fish, and it is string theory physical region. And this is what we call a leaf, and it is Mears theory region, physical region. In comparison, here I draw a theta plane for relativistic models, and this strip here is what could be called a physical strip of a relativistic model, and that one is a physical strip of its Mears theory. And for relativistic models, the series coincide because actually we have always a difference of two rapidities. So the fact that they are shifted by pi over two isn't that important. It becomes important when we study the spectrum because physical particles live here on the real line of the physical region of kind of original theory. Not the near one. Okay. All that was done, and in particular to derive the TBA equations for the Mears theory, it is necessary to have the corresponding beta-Jahn equations. They look almost the same as the Bysshe-Schneider equations. There are, however, some extra square root of x plus of x minus factors, which have to be taken into account. Otherwise, the corresponding model is not unitary, or better to say, the corresponding equations do not correspond to a unitary model. So the unitarity is broken unless we take into account some of these factors. Okay, so as I said, the idea belongs to Zamolodchikov. He used it for relativistic models. And according to Zamolodchikov, ground state energy is related to the free energy of the Mir series at temperature T equal to 1 over J. So you remember that J is the length of the original series, of the string series. So this is a precise relation. I don't have time to explain how it is obtained, but it is quite simple. And by definition, the mirror TBA for the ground state is a set of non-linear integral equations on functions, which are called Y functions. And solutions to solution to these equations compute the free energy of the Mir series, and then we can extract the free energy, and then we can extract the ground state energy of the string series by using this formula. So it is well known in the condensed matter literature that to find the TBA equations, it is necessary to formulate a string hypothesis which counts the states which survive in the thermodynamic limit. So we need to know the string hypothesis for the Mir series. And I should say that string here has nothing to do with Lightcone string theory. String refers to so-called beta string configurations, and that's how the beta roots, the solutions of the beta equations, arrange themselves. So in this particular model, in the DS5S5 case, there are 9 types of beta strings. Yeah? Well, I skipped this part. Yes, strictly speaking, there are 2 sectors in the light cone string theory, a sector with periodic fermions and a sector with antiperiodic fermions. A sector with periodic fermions is a BPS sector. And for this sector, strictly speaking, we have to compute not the free energy, but Witten's index. In the sector with antiperiodic fermions, we have to compute the free energy. Technically, it is not really important. There is no difference in the technical derivation. You just need to add some complex chemical potential. Actually, I think Wolf Henley was the first one who did it. No? Sorry. Was you the first one who computed Witten's index? Yeah, with imaginary chemical potential. Ah, okay. Okay, so it's been a while when it was done. in any case, yeah, so I skip this part. I will be talking about free energy, but you should remember that it is free energy with imaginary chemical potentials, and so, strictly speaking, it is a Witten's index. Because I will be studying, actually, only the BPS sector. Okay, so we have 9 types of Y functions. And this function in the middle, which we call YQ function, it is a Y function for Q particle bound states of the mirror series. And this is, and only Q particle bound states carry energy, and all the other particles carry no energy. They are just, all the other beta string configurations do not carry any energy, they are just auxiliary functions. So this is the main function. And as a result of this, since only these configurations, Q particle bound states carry energy, the ground state energy, the free energy and ground state energy correspondingly depends only on YQ. So in principle, all we need is to know these functions. Everything else is garbage. Unfortunately, we do not at the moment know how to deal without them. So this is the formula. You know, we have this set of TBA equations. I will show you later how it looks like. We solve the TBA equations. We find YQ functions, substitute it here, and compute the ground state energy. That's how it works. Okay, once the ground state energy, once the string hypothesis was formulated, it is more or less straightforward to derive the TBA equations. They can be written in many different forms, in canonical, simplified, hybrid, quasi-local. And they lead immediately to the Y system and also allow us to determine the jump discontinuity conditions on Y functions. So once the TBA equations for the ground state have been found, we can use
as I said, various tricks to derive the PBE equations for excited states. So they can be derived. Well, basically now there are two ways to do it. We can derive them, the TBA equations for excited states, by using kind of the idea by Dory, Patrick Dory and Patel. And well, this we call the contour deformation trick. And then we can also use the Y system and the jump discontinuity conditions and derive the TBA equations from the Y system and jump discontinuity conditions. It has been done recently. Well, it basically follows the approach by Bajanov, Lukyanov, and Zamolodchik. It has been done very recently by Balak and Hegedush. I should say that it is very interesting and very complicated paper. I'm not capable repeating the computations they did. So this way, however, is better because it also gives us an expression for the energy, for the free energy and for the energy of the corresponding, as a result, for the energy of the corresponding excited state. In this case, even if you have a set of TBA equations, you still would have to find the corresponding integration contour. Otherwise, you would not have the expression for the energy. Okay, so these are simplified TBA equations. This is not the best form of the equations. At least for numerics, it's better to use hybrid TBA equations, but hybrid TBA equations are much longer, and I would not be able to fit them on one slide. So instead, I show you just simplified equations. So unfortunately, I didn't have enough room on this blackboard to explain the notations. So we have here Y functions. We have here star hat and star check. We have here S, and S is a kernel. So all the stars denote kind of convolution. It is not, strictly speaking, the usual convolution, because some of these kernels, for example, this one, depends on two variables. It doesn't depend on the difference. So if you, maybe I'll write, somewhere here, one of these definitions. So if you have two functions of two variables, well, one function, let's say, of one variable, and second one of two variables, then by definition, du over some contour. So that's a definition. So as you see, if it is of a difference form, it is a usual convolution. If not, well, it is a definition. So that's how it is defined. So in these equations, we have, as I said, many, many different kernels. S kernel is the simplest one. It is proportional to one over hyperbolic cosine of u times g. And it is a kernel which appears all the time in the TBA literature. So, and there are also other kernels. All the kernels are known, so the equation is well defined. I do not give you the expression for this delta. It is not the scaling dimension. Unfortunately, we didn't found a better notation. So this delta determines jump discontinuity conditions for Y1 function. And actually, if you use the Y system approach, that's the quantity which is extremely difficult to compute. So that's the set of equations. Here, for each of these stars, we have, and for each of these functions which appear in this expression, we have a contour, integration contour. And the same, so in particular for YQ functions, here we have some definite integration contours. And the same integration contours appear in the expression for the energy. So the idea of the contour deformation trick is that the form of the ground state TBA equations is always the same for any state. What changes only is what we integrate, over what contour we integrate the Y functions. And in particular, the expression for the energy is also always the same. I do not know any exception to this principle, to this trick. I think it works for any relativistic model. If anyone knows any exception, please let me know. As a result, if this contour deformation trick indeed works, then this equations give us the full spectrum of ADS5S5 string and n equal 4 super mils. All you need to do is to take a contour for all these functions, contours for all these functions, solve the equations, and compute the energy. And that's it. Well, the trouble is that there are, of course, many different solutions. For one and the same integration contour, you can have many solutions. So you need to kind of specify initial conditions to work with these equations in reality. So how it works then? What plays the role of the initial condition in this framework are the zeros and poles of the function y and function 1 plus y. So if you have, as you see from these equations, in many places here we have expressions like 1 plus 1 or y2 or 1 plus y vw. So this kind of combinations appears all the time in the equations. And as a result, if you have a contour, as shown here, actually this is the integration contour for what we call Kanishi-like states at small coupling. Strong coupling must be a little bit different. So if you have a function y and this function, say, equal to minus 1 at some point, this is this Z torus I showed you here. So this is this Fish physical region of the string theory. So as a result, string theory particles, they live in this region. They have momentum. Well, if all the particles are carry real momentum, they have momentum on this line. And this is the mirror theory real line. So for the ground state, all integration contours are over this real line. So for the excited states, we deform the contour. We choose it like that. And then if we have some singularities inside this contour, and if we take this contour back to the real line of the mirror theory, and then we see that this kind of singularities of 1 plus y function, or let's say f log of 1 plus y function, will produce us extra terms coming from the singularities. We get 1 over w minus z star in this case. So we get a pole. When we integrate it, we get this function, which is the driving term in the TB equations. So we will have ground state TB equations plus driving terms in these equations. So specifying these singularities gives us kind of initial conditions. And after that, these equations here have usually unique solution. Well, at least a weak coupling. Actually, there is no proof that the solution is unique, even in this case. Okay, so, and as I said, the expression for the energy is always the same as for the ground state expression. So if you have zeros of 1 plus yq somewhere inside this contour, if you take the contour back to the real line, then the zeros will produce us this contribution because p tilde in the string region becomes just the string energy. So p tilde is the momentum of the mirror theory, of the mirror particle, and in the string region it becomes just the energy. So we get this sum, which is the usual contribution, which comes from the beta-Young ansatz, or asymptotic beta equations, whatever you prefer to call it. And so epsilon of p is just the dispersion relation of the particles. And this term gives us the finite size contribution. Okay, and finally, we need to find the location of this momentum. And the momenta are found by using quantization conditions, which we call the exact beta equations. And these equations appeared for the first time in the paper by Bajanov, Ulgianov, Zamolochik, Vandori, and Tateo, in these two papers, to my knowledge. So the equation looks quite obvious, yeah, y1. So star means analytic continuation of this y function to the string region. So what we take, we have like, we solve equations for, we take the contour back to the real line, then all the y functions depend on the real real moment or well, some other variable of the mirror region. So we solve it for real values of u, and then we analytically continue the solution here, and we set the corresponding function to minus one. So again, string theory, it is here. So star denotes this analytic. Star denotes this analytic continuation of the first function corresponding to fundamental particles, actually of the mirror theory and also of the string theory. Okay. So if you have this condition, then again we get this expression. So the exact beta equations work very nicely for real values of the momenta. However, we do not really know if they would work exactly in the same way for complex momenta. So complex momenta, the states with complex momenta have not been analyzed yet in the TBA framework, and they're going to be quite complicated, yeah? This one? Yeah, so this abutment, so K goes from 1 to n, this gives exact beta equations for all states, yeah. We may need other equations, yeah? So other functions also may be equal to minus 1 at some point, so it... right, so this, you see this y1 star. One means it is fundamental particles. So we have beta equations only for fundamental particles, not for bound states. And that's why we have to deal here in this framework with complex momenta. Complex momenta sometimes correspond to bound states. Not always, actually. In the SU2 sector, for finite values of the length of the operator, there are infinitely many states which have, well, not, well, infinitely many, yeah, which have nothing to do with bound states. They cannot be considered as bound states even though they have complex momentum. But for large lengths, yeah, this would be kind of finite size approximations to bound states, but we would have to consider these bound states not as a particle, but as a composite object made of two fundamental particles. To particle bound state, for example. So what I'm talking now basically works for real momentum only. As I said, we do not really know how TBA works for states with complex momentum. We are working on this, but we do not understand the full details. The story is different, and if I'll have time, I will comment on it later, okay? So, it's of course not the end of the story, because we need to know at least approximate location of the momenta of these particles to write the TBA equations. And to do it, it is very useful, maybe even necessary to use the Banach-Yannick asymptotic solution. The solution works, strictly speaking, for large J only for the large size of the system, but because of this non-relativistic dispersion relation, it also works for finite values of the charge J and for very small values of the string tension, so for very small values of the Toft-Kaufman constant. The solution is given for the function YQ, for the function which corresponds to Q particle bound states of the mirror theory. And it is written in this form. So this epsilon q is given by this expression. And as you see, it has this minus j e tilde. E tilde is the energy of the mirror particle,
of a mirror q-particle bound state. It is positive, and as a result, this guy here is exponentially suppressed for large J. And SL2 is this matrix which describes a scattering of a q-particle bound state of the mirror theory and a fundamental particle of the string theory. So TQ1 here is an eigenvalue of a properly normalized SU2/2 transfer matrix, and explicit expressions for all these transfer matrices are known. Okay, so why this form is good, actually? If we take a look at the first function, y1, and if you can see the analytic continuation of this function, y1, to the string region, then we will get these equations and set this function to -1. Then we will get this equation, and this is nothing else as the beta equations in the SL2 sector. So it comes like that because of the normalization of the proper normalization of the transfer matrix. In this sense, you see this asymptotic solution is compatible with the exact beta equations. So the next step is that well, we have these YQ functions, but we want to know all auxiliary functions asymptotically. And it is easy to show that all the other auxiliary functions are just fixed by the function YQ. So if the Banach-Yannick solution is the right one, asymptotic solution is the right one, then we know the full asymptotic solution. Okay, so let me show you the Bassert-Staudach equations. I know you've seen them many times. So there is this main equation, and that's the equation which follows from the y1 function. And then, so it depends on pk or uk. So uk, it's a different parameterization of the momenta. X plus minus, they are also different parameterization of the momenta. Here are some formulas for x, plus and minus. Well, we have this extra square roots, but for physical states, they are not really necessary for states with the total momentum equal to zero. So then we have auxiliary roots y and w. And if we know all these numbers, then we can write down the weights of the corresponding representations of the representation of the state we are studying. So the equations determine basically everything asymptotically. 10 minutes. Wow. Okay. You started later. I remember. Yes. And there was a banquet yesterday. okay, so this contour deformation trick. So the general strategy is start with the Bassert-Staudach equations, solve them at small values of the coupling G. Actually, you should start from G equal to zero, from one loop on that. Then, once you solve these equations, you choose a solution. And this solution is characterized by a definite set of momenta which depend on the Toft coupling constant or string tension. Auxiliary roots, however, are completely fixed by the momenta pk, and they play no independent role in the description of the state.
Sorry, why?
Why? Well, because they are expressed through momenta. You solve the equations, you have these equations. You first solve the auxiliary equations for w and y, then you substitute it in the set of beta equations, and you get equations for the momenta only. You solve the equations for the momenta. There are many solutions, of course, yeah, definitely. There are many solutions, but once you found the solution and pick up the solution, a definite choice of the momenta P, all Ys and Ws are fixed uniquely through this solution. Right? Yeah, sure. Sure. That's how it works. Hmm? No, once you solve y and w, you get equations for the momentum only. You can eliminate auxiliary roots from the equations. You see, it's basically a statement that you have a spectrum
which depends only on the moment of particles. All these auxiliary roots are needed only to find the spectrum of physical states, which depend only on the momenta. You are given some set of momenta, and this set of momenta determines you the state. Okay, so in any case, that's how it works in all cases we studied. Yeah, you need to specify also, as I said, these numbers. You see, probably what you are talking about is this degeneracy related to
the those numbers and fixing the momentum do not fix the gravity of the root of the auxiliary level. So
they do after some permutations.
No, of course not. You need to fix mode numbers at the auxiliary level. So there is
mode numbers.
Yeah, of course. So if you fix then
If you fix the occupation, the total occupation numbers, yeah. Of course, that does not fix the beta state completely. I mean, we have a huge spectrum, so we have to fix.
You get different momenta. You get different equations for momenta. You see, you are thinking about this differently than I do. If you fix a mode number m for auxiliary roots, you get different solution of the main beta equations. My logic is different. I first solve the main beta equations for the momenta and then find from this solution y roots and w roots. Of course, after that, you can compute the log of this, of the left-hand side of these equations and find the momenta if you want to. But the momenta are not uniquely defined.
So you will
find
the momenta in terms of the auxiliary variables, right?
How you solve it. I solve it differently.
I first eliminate
y's and w's and substitute them into this main equation. Then I solve the main equations, find momenta, and from that I find y and w's. They will be different. But there will be many different solutions for y and w's, so I will have to pick up some solution. But the momenta will be also different. It's necessary to fix k2 and k3, definitely, yeah. Otherwise. Mode numbers will appear in the solution of the main equation. These mode numbers. Okay. So if you can find a counterexample, good. So after that, we need to choose integration contours and to find the TPA equations and impose the exact beta equations. So, as I said, there are no equations. Since auxiliary roots do not play basically a major role here, there are no equations to determine the exact locations of the auxiliary roots. Y functions are just regular at the locations of auxiliary roots. Do not have either zeros, poles, or minus ones there. Asymptotic Y functions have zero poles and minus ones at other locations, and exact Y functions would have similar properties too, so we would have to impose some extra quantization conditions, which could be called generalized quantization conditions on these values. Okay, and then, well, some zeros, poles, and minus ones of asymptotic Y functions might be spurious and be absent in the exact Y functions. In all examples we studied, they lie outside the analyticity strip. So analyticity strip on this picture, it is this region here. Well, we have also the same curve here, so it is these two lines. In the mirror series, analyticity strip is between this. On the U-plane, it is a strip between the cuts, first cuts of the Y1 function. Okay. So the energy spectrum is very degenerate, but actually Stein yesterday discussed this degeneracy. And he discussed how it is lifted by using the TBA equation. So I think I can skip this part. And again, let me stress that what we said should work only for real momenta. If you have states with complex momenta, then the story is going to be different. And maybe what you are saying actually is true for complex momenta.
We have this work where we studied the SU2 carousel, where we have physical momenta and isotopic momenta. And there we have one equation for the physical momenta, which is fixed by specifying one mode number, and one equation for the isotopic momenta, specified by another mode number. This is how also how it works for the...
If you fix this, this second is also mode how it number, you get different set of momenta, right? The solution for momenta will depend on this number of...
Of course, but you do need...
that's what I'm saying. I'm using different logic. I first fix momenta, physical momenta, and then if you want to find this extra number, you use the solution for momenta to find this extra number. I'm not interested in the number as itself. For me, momenta plays the only role.
But if you only have one equation, if you only have one equation for physical momenta, how do you input the information of which solution you want for the isotopic one?
I choose a solution. I have many, many different solutions of the equations. So I choose one.
You have one single equation, so that has one single
integer. I have momenta. I choose momenta. Right? I start with g equal to zero. I have many solutions. I pick one. I can pick another one. It will correspond to a different different mode number for auxiliary roots. But it will be a different solution. It will have different momenta at g equal to zero at weak coupling.
Just one equation. Y of p equal to minus one, that is parameterized by one single integer.
So maybe I should say a little bit more precisely this. For finite g, there may be an intersections of these curves. For g equal to zero, there is no degeneracy from this point of view, but then they may intersect somewhere, these curves. In any case, well, this is a set of known PBA equations. Most of them are from SL2 sector. And, well, this is the only, this is the only example of TBA equations for non-SL2 sector, but all states have real momenta, so we don't know how to deal with complex momenta yet. Okay, so I have 10 minutes left, so let me say a little bit about two-particle states. So two-particle states can be easily analyzed because at g equal to zero, the solution is very simple, and it is specified by two integer numbers, n and j. N is the mode number in a field theory, and in a string theory, it is a string level. So for the Kanishi operator, j is equal to 2, n is equal to 1. So once we find the solution, once we pick a solution with definite n and j, we should analyze the structure of asymptotic y functions, and we find that y functions have different analytic structures. These functions, YVW functions, have different analytic structures, and as a result, we have different types of states. So this is the simplest type of states, and the Kanishi operator belongs to this type of states. So this is different number of zeros of these Y functions. Okay, so then this is a picture at G equal to zero. It's a very small value of the coupling constant. If we start increasing the coupling constant, the situation changes, and the number of zeros of these Y functions begins to increase, and if we use the asymptotic solution, we came to a conclusion that eventually at infinite g, all these y functions would have four zeros. This is a conclusion based on the asymptotic analysis only. And what happens in reality, we do not know. It is quite possible that the actual number of zeros here depends on the operator. So each operator, each state could have its own number of zeros. Okay, so this is a strong coupling expansion. It has this form for two particle states. It is expansion in powers of fourth root of n squared lambda. The first coefficient here, the leading term coefficient, is equal to 2 as follows from the spectrum of string theory in flat space and also from the asymptotic beta ansatz, even though we do not really understand why it follows from the asymptotic beta ansatz. This coefficient is believed to be equal to zero, at least again, that's what follows from the beta ansatz and also from some free fermion model. It was also recently confirmed by Jan Plevka and collaborators. The other coefficients are functions of J and N, obviously. Then there was a paper by Roybon and Seidlin, and they claim that C2 must vanish due to supersymmetry of the model. And finally, there was a very brave conjecture by Gromov, Kazakov, and Viera that all the even coefficients actually are equal to zero. If it is the case, then the actual expansion not is not in powers of fourth root of n squared lambda, but in powers of square root of n squared lambda. It would require really miraculous cancellations between various contributions if you do this computation perturbatively. I'm not aware of any proof of this conjecture. So the TBA equations can be solved numerically. I did it up to 2047. In principle, I think I could do it up to something like 3000. After that, my code would not be able to handle the equations. So these are the curves. The red one is the leading asymptotics. This brown one is what we get from the asymptotic beta ansatz, and this is the numerics. Numerics is obvious always below than the asymptotic solution, because you remember we subtract a positive term from the asymptotic from the dispersion relation. So my numerics agrees with the numerics done by Gromov, Kazakov, and Gera up to the value they computed and up to their precision. So if you use the numerics, we get this. If we set these coefficients to zero, as I said, they conjectured that it is the case, so they set them to zero. One gets this fitting, and from this fitting, we really see that it is two, and this is close to two as well. So their prediction was that C1 is equal to two. So, okay, unfortunately, I don't really have time to discuss the subtleties of the numerical fitting of the large of the asymptotic expansion. Let me just say that, in principle, it is not very reliable. It may be not reliable. Hopefully, in the case we are studying, it is reliable. But this is a very simple example which shows that analytically, this function asymptotes to 2 fourth root of lambda. But numerically, if you do this computation for any reasonable value of the Toft coupling, you would get minus 2 fourth root of lambda. So we must make various assumptions before we do the fitting. Okay, so since I don't have time, let me just say that if you do the fitting and if you keep this lambda, 1 over lambda to the 5 fourth term in the expansion, then fitting my data well in this interval, I get this series. And well, this coefficient, as you see, is really close to 2, so it looks good. This is not really zero, but it's also more or less small. What is funny is that the first subleading coefficient is very small. The story, however, changes as soon as I fix the first coefficient to be equal to 2 and do the fitting again. Then the constant term becomes really small. And that one isn't small anymore. It is of order 1. So since we believe that it is 0, let's put it to 0. Once we do it, the first subleading coefficient is 1.99, which is also quite close to 2. So we can proceed. We can set this coefficient to 2. And then we see that the coefficient here becomes very small as well. So this is the coefficient B2, which was argued by Roybon and Seidlin, must vanish due to supersymmetry. And we see that indeed it vanishes. So once we set this to 0, we get this series. And unfortunately, well, this guy isn't equal to 0. It doesn't mean that the conjecture is incorrect, that the GKV conjecture about the structure of the strong coupling expansion is incorrect. It may just mean that my precision is not enough to make. Well, it doesn't really change the conclusion. Yeah, I played with different values of the starting point and with different values of 7.2. Basically, I can always find an interval where you get something very small for this coefficient. But on the other hand, I can find also a fitting interval where this coefficient will be quite large. So as I said, my precision most probably is not sufficient to say anything about this coefficient. If you set, however, all even coefficients to zero, we will get this expansion. And from that, we definitely can see that it is extremely close to 2, and this also quite close to 2. And well, this number is slightly different from the one obtained by GKV, but it's also reasonable. So this, there was a paper by Valil and Mazzucato, and they kind of confirmed the coefficient too, but experts actually are saying that there are some imprecisions in their computation, so I cannot really comment on that. So, so if you subtract these terms, the leading asymptotics, we will get this curve. And as you see, it really goes very nicely to zero, and it is extremely smooth, just increasing. There is nothing interesting there. So this is another state with j equal to 4, n equal to 1. And this state shows the critical behavior at very small values of g. Oops, sorry. What's going on here? Yeah, at very small values of g, about 1.85. Unfortunately, my numerics appears to be absolutely unreliable in this region between so-called critical and subcritical values. And I do not really know how to handle this numerically, at least within the TBA approach. Maybe the NLIE approach will be more successful in analyzing this region of the coupling constant. Another interesting point here is that iterations, by some reason, stopped at 3.4. At 3.5, they diverge. And I have no explanation to this. I don't know why. It is not supposed to be like that. Okay, so fitting the data, I get C1 equal to 5. This is what you get if you subtract. You see that something funny may indeed happen here. It could be something like an inflection point in this region. But I do not really trust numerics for these two values. They are too close to a so-called subcritical value of g. If I remove these points, then there will be one inflection point in this picture. So maybe critical values lead to the appearance of inflection points in the graph of the energy. So that's numerics for other states. I analyze states with different values of j and n as well. And these are predictions for different values of n. So for n equal to 1, the first subleading coefficient, non-trivial subleading coefficient, is predicted by TBA to be j squared over 4 plus 1. For the string level equal to 2, it is also j squared over 4 plus 1. But for n equal to 3, I got g squared over 4 without any constant. So the conclusion is that the exact subleading coefficient for all j and n would have this form, g squared over 4 plus some function which depends on the string level. Well, there are, of course, many functions which satisfy these predictions. This is kind of the simplest one. I don't think that it is what one would get from the exact solution. So I don't have time to talk about PSU2, 2/4. Let me just say that the consideration of the PSU2, 2/4 symmetry shows that this invariance is basically built in the TBA approach. Y functions are simply invariants of the PSU2, 2/4 algebra. So we can handle definitely, I believe that we can handle any state with real momenta. And states which contain complex momenta, they still represent a challenge. We don't really know how to deal with them. We don't know the equations. So there are many questions which we would like to have answers for. But I don't think that numerics will be sufficient to answer to these questions. In fact, we need something much more effective. We need analytic methods, and at the moment, the only hope is to find some non-linear integral equation, a la Destre de Vega. And, well, hopefully, it will allow to develop analytical methods, strong and decoupling expansions for the energy. And finally, let me show you the assumptions. It was necessary, absolutely necessary to make to realize the TBA program. So the assumption number one is quantum integrability of the light cone string theory and its mirror theory. Everyone is talking about integrability in this subject. No one has a proof. Second, symmetry algebra of the light cone string theory and its mirror theory in the decomputification limit. It is also an assumption. There is no proof that the symmetry algebra is as it is. The computations, the considerations we did was done only in the limit of very large string tension. For finite string tension, we don't know the answer. Second, the BES dressing factor, even though it satisfies everything we know, it is still a conjecture. Then, by Nokianic asymptotic solution, all our consideration was relied on the solution. If the solution isn't quite correct, then what we do is also not correct. Finally, this is a very sad point here, string hypothesis for the mirror theory, because string hypothesis cannot be proven. there are string hypotheses for various condensed matter models, and they never can be proven. So it is always a conjecture. By this reason, I'm afraid the TBA approach will never be completely justified. It will be always a little bit heuristic. Finally, we used the contour deformation trick, and we do not know if it is universal, if it works for any state, and we don't really understand why it works. And the final point is the exact beta equations. They were assumed to be of this form, the same form as it is for relativistic models. In the case of relativistic models, this condition, 1 plus y is equal to 0, usually makes some other y functions to behave better. So it removes some poles, some singularities of y functions. In this case, it is also so. But this condition removes poles and singularities of y functions not on the mirror line of string, not on the mirror plane. It removes singularities on other sheets of this infinite genus Riemann surface where functions are defined. And moreover, we know that these wave functions in ADS-5S5 case, in any case, have poles, zeros, various branch cuts. So it is not clear why we should actually require them not to have some extra poles somewhere very far from the mirror theory region. So this also must be understood much better. Okay, thank you for your attention and sorry.
More questions?
Time for the second breakfast.
Yeah, I have a comment about this vanishing of, could you show the expansion of the energy at strong coupling, where you were saying there are some coefficients should vanish or maybe vanish?
Yeah, this one?
No, I think the previous one.
Well, oh, yeah, it's basically the same one, right?
Yeah, yeah. C1,
C2. So C0 is equal to 0 for two particle states. It's true only for two particle states.
So these are... No, not this one. No.
What? You don't like
the previous one? Where you were referring to this conjecture, which...
Ah.
That these coefficients vanish, or the, yeah, earlier. So if you look at gauge theory, you're not doubting...
One?
Yeah. You're not doubting that your gauge anomalous dimension has expansion in G squared at small coupling, right?
Right.
So that G squared is a natural parameter in expansion. So now if you look at string theory...
Yeah.
There is also a natural parameter, which is ratio of string tension, so curvature of string tension.
Yes.
So if you look at vertex operators and conditions on them, that will be natural expansion. There is nothing to doubt here.
I don't know how to do expansion in string theory for this operator. I know that if I look at the light cone string theory and try to develop
so this is a question about just this particular framework, how you prove this in that framework. That's true. But on general grounds, we should expect that in string theory. If this
I don't think so. I do not see why we should expect this. As I said,
it's a definition of how you actually compute
the. But we think it will be expansion in 1 over square root of lambda. No one knows how to define vertex operators, including fermions.
Well, that's a question.
Fermions may change the story completely. Unless I see a proof, it is an expansion in 1 over fourth root of lambda. I'm not saying it is the expansion. I'm saying that it is an open question. To me, it is not obvious. And, you know, I remember when we with Arkady was writing these papers on spinning strings, we had all these expansions and powers of lambda over J squared, and we were arguing that it must be like that at any order always, because everything must cancel out and everything must be nice and good. Well, it didn't work like that, right? So I want to see a proof.
Anybody knows the proof?
Huh? You can prove it? Then you need to give another talk. Actually, maybe I give another comment about these predictions. So there was a paper by whom? Gromov, Serban, Wolin, and Shidirovich, right? And they actually they used this folding string to compute to compute one loop correction to the folding string, and then they used some interpolation, and then obtained some formula, which in particular contains this one, this coefficient for some particular case. So if I use their formula, in their formula I have to substitute S to 2. Because the spin S for my configuration is equal to 2. So if I use their formula and substitute S equal to 2 to their formula, I get J squared over 4 plus 1. There will be no N dependence in their formula. So as a result, TBA actually at the moment disagrees with this extrapolation of semi-classical results to states with a finite. Charges. So I believe that it must be some quite non-trivial and interesting function C of n. It would be really interesting to understand it.
Any other questions, comments? If not, then let's thank Sergey again. And since we are running late, let's meet at 11:15.